This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
I'd like to call to order the Johnson County Hospital District meeting for March of 2025. In our new meeting room, the Lake Angeline Conference Room.
Solitude.
Well, it says Lake Angeline. So, give me a break. Solitude.
Make sure to update that. I apologize.
We'll just call it the new meeting, then.
Just for today. Next month, we'll go back to the other one.
All right. Well, our first order of business would be to review and approve the prior month's board meeting minutes. And I do have one addition to make. Our director of quality was here, but didn't make the roll call somehow. So we should give her full credit and add her name to the list.
That was last. You missed your opportunity.
Got it. I will update that.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes from last board meeting with that change.
Second. It has been moved and seconded. Those in favor, please, by saying aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Our next order of business is the 2024 audit approval, and I saw someone on the screen who has something to do with that.
Indeed.
Yep.
Nope, not that one. You need to go to the page. There you go.
Okay. Thanks. You guys ready?
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to keep this pretty high level. We just got done kind of going through everything in a little more detail with Finance Committee. I'm just going to kind of highlight some of the bigger picture stuff in the financial statements, kind of go through analytical ratios. Audit-wise, we've got everything pretty well wrapped up. We had a few single audit things that we're still kind of cleaning up, but I think, Shelly, look, I don't think we're going to have any findings at the moment, so I think we can get that part tied together, too, and get it all issued together. So I think Luke had sent some stuff in information around procurement, all that good stuff. So I think we keep this moving along. So let me share my screen here, and we'll just kind of look at some numbers. And then if you guys have any questions, just let me know. But okay. Can you guys see that okay? Good?
Yep.
Okay. So balance sheet, real quick, I just want to hit a couple things here, because when we look at the ratios, we'll kind of see some of those changes. But so here's your assets as far as at 6/30/2024. See a decrease in cash, and we'll talk a little bit about that as we kind of keep going. Other receivables, there's a pretty big increase, about $2.2 million. That is made up of the SLIB grant and the USDA grant. About $1.8 million was outstanding there, so that's the change. The other one is on your cost report. So there was a pretty big receivable that was filed for, and there's even a little more when it gets amended. So just a couple big items there on the asset side I wanted to point out. On the liability side, changes year to year. There's a pretty big increase here in this accrued expenses, salary, wages, and benefits. A lot of that increase really dealt with was because of the accrual for the self-funded health insurance that needed to be done. So those claims were up, so a higher amount needed to be accrued. So overall, though, when you look at it, your balance sheet, you can see you've got roughly 57.5 million total assets. Take off your liabilities, and what's left is about 44 million in equity. So from a balance sheet strength standpoint, your equity is still pretty strong. And you look at the ratios, you'll see this percentage a little bit. Income statement-wise, then, a couple things to note. Net patient service revenue increased by about $4.1 million. On the other side of that, though, operating expenses increased by about $5.8 million. So the operating loss itself increased by about $1 million roughly. In the non-operating section, really things are pretty similar to last year, with the exception of one of the bigger items here is the provider relief grant funds. We kind of don't have those this year. We had last year, that's all done. And then one big item that's different this year versus last year is these capital grants and contributions. So that's the other side of the receivable, is recognizing the income for the receipt that's going to come in of those grants. So that's about $2.3 million. So overall, your change in your net position or your equity, where we left the balance sheet, ends up being a positive about $310 versus last year being a little bit of a negative about $59,000. So overall, we stayed about where we were last year, right? As far as where we sit, as far as bottom line, there it kind of goes. So with that, I'm going to jump into these ratios, because I think this is a pretty good way to get a bigger picture look and to compare you to similar hospitals. So this is similar to the information we presented in years past. The way the ratios start, they start out with the balance sheet strength, more of a measurement. And so here's, you can see days cash on hand. When we talked about cash going down, a lot of that cash got used to fund your building project. So you can see we started 3 years ago, you're at 183, now you're down to 30. I know this number's come up because you then had to do some more borrowings or end up doing some more borrowings on a new loan that was ready to be kind of drawn on. So obviously credit group, a little bit low, but knowing that you took that money and reinvested in your building project, obviously we can understand that. Days in net patient accounts receivable, 53 this year. To the groups around 50. So really, these numbers look pretty good. It's good to see AR. AR has made, there's been some tremendous improvements in AR from where you guys started, or when we started working with you guys as far as the audit goes. And then your current ratio. Current ratio-wise, you can see it went down, but obviously, again, in the middle of the building project, taking on some new debt, you're still 3.5 times, so that still sits pretty good at this moment, or as of 6/30/2024. The group really sits really strong. I guess we're fortunate we've got some losses that are pretty good shape overall, balance sheet strength-wise. And then kind of continuing on that same, trend here as far as our average age of plant goes, really pretty comparable to the group. See, this number's gone down. That's due to that building project. So you can see that trending down. And then your debt service coverage ratio. You can see the group runs about 4.4. You were 3.3 this year, so a little bit less than a group. Hopefully this number as you keep going forward, will end up staying above that 3. If it does, that's obviously in pretty good shape as far as being able to cover any, be able to service the debt that you've taken on. Here's where we see that change. Let's talk about the balance sheet, the new debt, the borrowings that were taken off. So really didn't have any debt going 3 years ago. And then we had some last year, now some year before, and then now in 2024, we're about 16.4%. So what this is basically saying is we're financed for leverage. It's that kind of a percentage at about 16%. This is still a relatively low number looking at how leveraged you are as a facility. You can see the group runs around 13. I've got some hospitals that are relatively new, or this number may be more like 60 to 70% leverage because of what they've had to do just to be able to build a new hospital. So just to give you some perspective, if I'm looking at this comparatively, really pretty much in line, especially knowing what you've done and taken on as far as a building project. So the next set here really breaks down the income statement a little bit more. So gross patient service revenue, so this is on the gross side, before any contractuals, increased by about 13%. Take off all the contractual adjustments to get down to that net patient service revenue number that shows up in your income statement, you can see about a 19% increase. So really, a really good increase as far as looking at it from a percentage standpoint. That's a pretty big increase. And then there's a breakdown of kind of where those kind of major high level of area breakdown of where those come from. Daily patient service revenues are up. Ancillary services that goes along with the outpatient type services. And then a breakdown here of the percentages of what make up the whole composition of the gross patient service revenue. So you guys run about 70% of everything really is based on your outpatient services when you break it down this way. The rest of these, we're looking at just outpatient departments and kind of where the bigger changes were year to year. So you can see where some of that growth was at, radiology lab, PT, Hospice kind of went the other way, and then emergency service went up too. So on the outpatient category, these are kind of the main driving departments that did it this year. And then moving to contractual adjustments. So this would be the percentage, basically, of every dollar charged. What's the net write-off number? You can see that you were about 24, now you're down about 23. The group runs around 29. In theory, the lower this number, potentially, we'll talk a little more about the cost segregation a little here at the end, but you still see pretty comparative. It's interesting, these numbers can really move from facility to facility depending on how heavy Medicare they are and the size of the facility. So, I've got some where their contractual adjustment percentage is a really low number because their costs are really high and they just don't have a lot of volume. So, we'll talk, like I said, a little bit of the inverse when we look at the cost charge ratio. One of the good things to see is bad debt expense, kind of getting back to where probably a little more normal or the expectation was, and that's that whole AR thing that we talked about when we first started auditing with some of the issues in the AR, and you can get some of the stuff off the books and cleaned up. So it really looks pretty good trend-wise compared to the rest. And then charity care really runs pretty similar. It's not a big number. Everybody has a pretty low charity care percentage. I think the main cause of that is they have a hard time identifying it and getting people to sign up for charity care is what we see. So, on the expense side, so again, these numbers come right off the income statement. Here's kind of a breakdown of the percentage increases in the dollars. Obviously, one of the big ones we talked about was employee benefits going up, and that's a lot of this related to health insurance. There is a table here that breaks down kind of the salary wages per FTE. So this is a global, this high level calculation, total hours worked, converted into FTEs, and then what's that average salary per FTE. So last year about a little under 70,000, it's about 74, so about a 6.8% increase to go along with that 7.3% increase in FTEs. And then this is kind of a good number to always kind of keep an eye on, I think. Is this employee benefits as a percentage of salary and wages? Again, we talked, your health insurance expense went up quite a bit. So it really changed this from 23% to about 27%. And what we were talking with the finance committee about a little earlier was the fact that if I was to look at most of our hospitals and say, well, what's their average look like? They probably run between 21% to 23% to 24%. So you were kind of what I'd say pretty similar, but this year kind of went up, obviously, about 27%. So hopefully the law of averages with insurance claims works out and starts kind of trend back the other way when it comes to your health insurance. So this table here just breaks down the increases in cost by kind of basically delivery of care patients categories. So this is non-salary costs. And then overhead tech departments, dietary, laundry, housekeeping, maintenance, administrative. What's included in administrative is kind of a catch-all bucket of health insurance. So that's in here. The other thing that's in here, I think, was, I can't remember the numbers, like $200,000 to $300,000 ERC fees were expensed in there too.
Yeah.
Sound about right?
Yeah, right at $200,000.
So that's kind of a one-time thing. I don't know, have you guys heard anything as far as where that stands at the moment?
We have not.
Okay. So I did hear from one of the nursing homes that I work with, one of the only ones I've heard of so far that apparently did receive notice. They were on hold, received notice that they were going to move forward and get their claim. So maybe things are moving forward with the IRS. I don't know. With everything going on, I'm not sure. But, they paused everything. So hopefully you'll hear something soon on that. So,
well, the only way that I've even seen suggested to speed it up is to file a claim with a taxpayer advocate.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that'll speed it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
It might. So, yeah. So, looking then at income statement ratios here real quick, operating margin, the blue is the VA average. You can see you guys had a little bit of downward trends the last couple of years. Over that, kind of starts to come back up, now with the building project done and all those things as you kind of go forward. So this is that operating loss converted to operating margin. total margin calculation is your excess of revenues over expenses off the income statement converted into a margin. So the group runs just a little bit above break-even. This year you were about break-even and now you're about negative 6.2. This does not include those capital contributions to 2.3 million. So if you were to put those in here, then you'd be right about this break-even number again. So that's just the way where that number gets reported. Kind of below the line at 2.3 million. So the cash flow margin then, again, same thing. This doesn't include those capital contributions. So you see the group runs a little bit of net positive. You guys were there and these last couple years trended down. Again, hopefully as you guys go forward with the building project and everything in place, hopefully this will kind of trend back up net positive. So some Medicare cost support information then. Charges per day versus cost per day. This is just your facility. And so here's what we can see. We talked about expenses overall going up. You can see the trend here. So the cost per day going up. And this is true for both Medicare inpatients and swing. Then they're computed through the cost report in the same manner. So both of them are going to trend the same. In looking at these numbers, though, what I will tell you, if I was compared to some others, I don't see this as being a super high number, just to give you some perspective on that cost per day. So this doesn't look that far out of line. This last one is your outpatient cost calculation. So if you were to look at this, you'd say, well, what does that mean? What it means is for every dollar of charge we have, gross dollar of charge, our costs are, in this case, 70%, or every dollar is 70 cents, right? So this is an upward trend. And so when we looked at your income statement, we see the operating loss going up, I think this kind of is what I would expect to have happen. So I'm hoping, as we were talking before we kind of came in, hopefully there's some services that I know you guys started up that'll start to kind of work their way back or work their way up, and more volumes also start to kind of stabilize, and this number will start to trend back down. So you can see you kind of went from 59 to 69. The group runs around 50. About 48 to 50. There's some, just to give you some perspective on this number, I've got the larger hospitals with high volume, their number's gonna be between 40% and 50%. And then the smaller the hospital is, less volumes, the higher this number goes up. So I think you're still in that range. Like I said, hopefully as you go forward, you start to see this trend, and I think you'll see the net positive then in your operating bottom line. So as you go forward, so. The last slide in here then is our Medicare inpatient payer mix. So it's just saying, well, what percentage of our services are to Medicare inpatients? But you see about 49. So a little bit less this year than what it was in the past. The group runs about 68, 70. So you're lower than the rest as far as those inpatients go, as far as total of your mix. But then on the outpatient side, you're pretty consistent. So right around 43% is what our critical access hospitals run, and you're right there with them. So what this is telling us is on your total hospital outpatient charges, 43% of that volume is to Medicare beneficiaries. So the inverse of that is to say, well, then the rest of it, the other 57%, is going to be Medicaid, self-pays, and commercial insurance. So what it does mean is that 43% of everything we do, we're going to get only paid costs on. The only place that we're not going to make any profit on those services, because it's Medicare cost-based principle, the only place to make any profit and improve the bottom line is then in our commercial carriers and those kind of things. So you've got a limited ability to potentially change the bottom line, because a lot of it's locked into cost-based, right? So I think that's the last one I had on here. So any questions on any of that information? That was pretty high level, and I felt like it was pretty quick, but I just want to make sure that anybody, any questions on any of that information at the moment?
There's a lot there. Okay. I mean, a lot of data.
Yeah, there is. What I would say is once everything kind of gets done and you guys get final copies of everything, if you have questions after the fact, just let me know. You know what I mean? I can kind of help maybe explain it even a little bit better if we need to spend more time on it. So I try to tell that to all of our boards to Obviously, anytime they get any questions or anything, then we go through to make sure they certainly ask me, so.
Well, and I will tell you that, you know, every month this year we've been reporting that it's hard to really nail down the expenses. There was about $2 million worth of journal entries done to clean up the financial statement for fiscal 24 so that it would be more stable going forward. So a lot of that happened during the audit and proposed auditor entries. So I leaned heavily on the auditors for help with that. So thank you for that, Kurt, and pass my thanks on to Stephanie and Faith as well. It's been an adventure. So I'm glad it's over.
Same here. So I'm looking forward to this next year's audit tremendously, actually. And I'm seeing kind of how things look, and as you guys keep making progress, so it's good to see. I know it was a lot to take on, which you walked into, Shelley. So so we're glad to be working with you and have to see things head in the right direction. So, and I just think it'll put everybody in a better position. It's hard to manage, obviously. You don't have as accurate of information as you need to. So obviously what we had talked about earlier was the net final, and the numbers we started with audit-wise to where we ended up being net positive change. So bottom line, got to net positive at least, so that's good to see. And like I said, you guys go forward and get some things, and I think you're almost there with some of the goodness and cleaned up, that it'll be here to just get a lot better. You get a lot better analytical information, a lot better decision-making, and then you kind of drill into some things and see kind of where you're making some money, maybe where you're losing some money too, as far as looking at some of those services. So so our next step then, just once we get the approval on the financial statements, go ahead and we'll be able to hopefully turn those around and get those issued relatively soon, put this one to rest, and then schedule the next one. And so the plan, and we're going to hopefully everything will work. So, Kelly, I think you feel comfortable with this, right? That
yes.
We'll plan the audit in the normal time frame, which is going to be more like a August, September type frame audit wise. And then hopefully, as long as you get passport number, we're issuing financial statements, November, December at the latest. If you can, hopefully, maybe a little sooner than that. So, okay.
And then that way, currently we have a waiver from our bank. We financial
yep.
statements are due within 180 days of fiscal year end. So the whole goal is to get
yep.
to where we don't have to have that waiver.
Yep. And that should be able to be done. Yeah, should not be a problem. So as long as we can get the information and get rolling on it. So yeah. Yep. So that's what I have for the audit. We did a few internal control comments, but they're the same ones as last year. We just, elimination of the journal entries and some of those things and some control deficiencies. And we've talked with Luke and Shelley about those. And I know Shelley's got a plan for some of those things. So as you guys go forward with that, if you got any questions or anything we can help with, Shelley, just let me know. And we can help work through those things too. So, okay.
So was 2024 about 5 months late? Roughly?
Yeah. Yeah-ish. Yeah. I mean, so the thing that'll hold up the cost, or will hold things up sometimes, is the Medicare cost report getting finalized. That's due November 30th, okay? So generally, and again, it all comes back to, if you get stuff to them early enough, they'll get it turned around, we'll have a number, we know the final adjustment. So a lot of the times at a 6th June 30th hospital, we're doing board meetings in October, November, sometimes December, but hopefully before that. So October, November is a reasonable goal for your audit to be turned around and done. And you agree with that, Shelley?
100%, yes.
Yep.
So in a general way, we should stay the course and keep doing what we're doing, and our overhead is likely to come down.
That's the hope. Yeah, I think, as we were talking earlier, some of the volumes, some of the services you guys have started up in 24, so we'll kind of see what those things do. That'd be interesting to see, as you guys go forward, you do a cost report template, some of those things, you can kind of see those trends in there, so I know there's some things there to see that Luke and Shelley can kind of keep an eye on, but yeah, that's what it looks like, where you guys are heading, so.
Well, it kind of sounds like, and you touched on it, I mean, hopefully we're going to get to a point here soon where ratios and you know, the trending starts to make more sense to us, because this has been an unbelievable project, and there's all these lag times, and I mean, we once we finish and get there, then stuff will probably start to be more meaningful, like days cash on hand or accounts receivable aging, you know, all these things. So
exactly, yeah. Whenever you're coming through a construction period, especially coming off all the stuff, COVID, all the things that happened, it's been hard to trend stuff. So now get back to normal and say, okay, here's what is normal, right? Yeah. You'll be able to set those standards and monitor it. Yeah, exactly. So
and this current fiscal year isn't going to be normal. It's going to be the subsequent one, likely.
2026.
Yep, exactly. We're still working. Yeah, we're still working through all those things. Exactly. Yeah. So.
Well, it's probably dinner time for you. Any other questions for Kurt, our auditor?
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Thank you for your time, all right. Kurt.
Thanks, Kurt.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Have a good rest of the evening, okay?
Bye.
So I would assume, need a motion to approve our 2024 audit.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded.
Who made it?
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed? The audit has been approved. Are you going to have a little celebration tonight?
There's wine in my future, yes.
Well deserved.
Well, our chief of staff is present, and that's the next item of business. So, Dr. Mullen, would you like to?
Sure. Sorry I missed the last meeting. I was coming off of hospitalist. And so a couple things. We've had a few deliveries now, more in our new OB space. So that's been really exciting. There's we've got 4 in 2 weeks. And there's probably been 5 deliveries, so we're working with the nurses, and Lonnie Cummings has done a really great job of organizing all of that and making that transition more smooth. And so we've used our new nursery and our new OB rooms, and patients and families have been very complimentary towards that space and stuff too. So that's been good. The hospital's been extremely busy. The hospitalists have been working a lot and very long hours, and things too. Our census has been high, and very staff. The nurses have all been working very hard too. It seems like that's just getting busier and busier. And I guess as far as the doctors go, sometimes it's hard to balance that with clinic. And so we're still trying to navigate those waters of how being hospitalist and still taking care of your clinic patients and messages and those kind of things. Working on some of those things. It is very helpful, and I think I mentioned this last time, but very helpful that we're not doing Saturday clinic when we're hospitalists anymore. Another provider is coming in for those Saturdays, and that's been extremely helpful, especially if you have 14 people on the floor or 12 people on the floor and trying to manage the clinic and stuff. You just feel like you get kind of pulled in too many directions. And then working on hospitalist coverage, if we have some kind of locums for the summer to help us with that while we're still looking for, you know, Dr. Kinner's replacement. And then two, just kind of navigating some IT issues with the IT department and stuff, and really looking forward to a new medical record sometime, like an electronic medical record that will all talk, and that's what the doctors would really, really like. I know it's very expensive, but there's just been some computer issues that make working a little bit challenging, especially in the clinic right now. It's slowly getting better, but it's still needs some fine-tuning. So those are kind of the main updates I have from the doctors.
That's a good summary. Any questions for our chief of staff, Dr. Mullen? Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you,
guys. Joining. Well, we'll have to do some spinning around to move into our leadership reports, but Brenda, would you like to start us off as a director of the care center?
Certainly. So now our census is 32. We are committed to 2 more admissions, and that'll bring us to 34. We're having a little trouble keeping up with our staffing. We do have some I attribute it to young people wanting to see what there is in life besides Wyoming. One of them's joining the service, and one of them said, I just turned 18, I'm moving to Washington, and one of them, for some reason, wants to move to North Dakota. but I did... I did do some calculating, found that I have two CNAs, already CNAs starting within a few weeks, had another CNA that I just interviewed that I hope we can bring her on next month too. That would leave us with a shortage of 4.85 FTEs, and a lot of that right now is being filled with PRN. I would really like to make more of those full-time. Summer's coming, and I know we have a couple of students that are anxious to work a lot of hours, so all of our nursing positions are backfilled. We just have to do the training, and then I just have to quit coming to work, and that'll all be good.
Okay, well, any questions for Brenda then?
Well, I was just going to ask Brenda, in your notes here, you commented that CMS is rating us unfairly or inaccurately.
It's not accurate. It's probably information they're getting from us, but we don't know what it is. And I'm trying to reach out to CMS, who has been ignoring my emails, and to find out because we have had Joanne as our administrator for 3 years, and it says, we look back today, and at one point it showed that we had a turnover to two administrators in two quarters, and that should have been zero. That should be a low number. It shows that we do not have an RN 8 hours a day, which is absolutely not correct. And there's no way that our, there's no way we're a one-star in staffing, no way. And but if we are and we're five-star in quality, we're something else.
But it does sound like, well, you're trying to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
So I was like, we probably need to find out why they're so underserved.
Yeah, Rebecca does the payroll-based journal, and she doesn't know. We're able to see exactly when things change, and she can't see any difference. And she said, who do we contact to dispute it? So that's why I'm trying to contact CMS.
Well, if it's anything like the IRS, it could take a long time.
Yeah, and it's almost like I'm not their top priority.
Well, that's overall good news.
Sort of.
Yeah, I don't understand the not coming to work part, but...
Well, when I retire in exactly 6 months, I am going to quit coming to work.
That's understandable.
Could you comment on senior prom? I mean, I was just...
Sure.
Yeah, how does it work? What is it?
Yeah, that's something we used to do before COVID. We did it every spring, and we... activities gets the decorations that they use at the senior high school prom, and then they decorate our facility, and we have a selection of ball gowns, and we have people come and do hair and makeup, and then Chrissy in dietary is really excited about it because she has all kinds of ideas. You know, it's mostly fancy hors d'oeuvres, and I believe Dr. Schuler is going to provide some live music, and it's a good time, and Lana Wayne's going to come in and do photography for us.
And we're looking for chaperones, if you'd like.
Designated drivers. There will be champagne.
Is that just to get people back to their rooms?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds cool.
That should be fun. Well, thank you, Brenda. As I look around, I guess... Our director of operations.
I'm hiding in the back. Yeah, I have a short list today. I just wanted to let you all know that we've formalized our first inaugural Johnson County Healthcare Foundation golf tournament on the 10th of September. So mark your calendars because you're all playing. Should be fun. It starts at 10 and should go till about 3 o'clock golfing, and then we'll have a little awards banquet afterwards. We're working through the details on that. Dr. Schuler's going to volunteer, so I'll pick a fun assignment for you.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. And then the last thing that's a little bit more of serious news. A few months ago, I shared with you all that we were going to roll out another security measure throughout the facility called Reflex Protect Spray. It's a CS-based spray to just give our staff a little bit more security with all of the new entrances that are coming live. Part of the program with Reflex Protect is they all need to get trained in order to be able to use the product. So we are almost all fully trained for the departments that are installing that. I have two more sessions with the lab next week, and then we will be fully live. So.
CS is an abbreviation of some sort.
Yes, the word's about this long, but it's active ingredient tear gas.
Okay. We probably don't want to go there.
No, but there is decon solution in the ER, so.
Probably need some training there too.
If you join the Army, you get to experience it, and it is not pleasant.
Not planning to. any questions for Anna? All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Next is our Director of Acute Care.
Please, everybody, I'll start out with that. It's gluten-free. I don't really have anything to add to my report, except I was going to add that we have had, I believe, 8 pediatric patients under the age of 5 in the hospital this year, which is a lot for us. We've had a very sick winter, unfortunately, of RSV and pneumonia and COVID and flu A. Anyway, I'm glad that they can stay here and not have to go somewhere else. It's awesome. Everybody feels comfortable with them, the nurses and the doctors. Yeah, so it's wonderful. But otherwise, I don't have anything to add to my report. I got a little vacation, and we were very, 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 very busy while I was gone. And they did amazing.
Somehow we made it with
that. Yes, I know. Thank you.
Well, last week I noticed we had 14 people in the hospital, which is a number I had.
I think we had 16 at one point.
That hasn't occurred since the COVID was at its worst. Right. And this was not really infectious disease based. It was just high volume. And as I thought about that, we do have some people who are on swing bed for extended periods waiting for another facility, Amy Holt being one of the main ones, which have been delayed a lot by Medicaid approval and some employees who were missing at the State Department. Mm-hmm. And are we still dealing with the fallout from that situation, or is that improving?
I think it's improving. So I'm the one patient that we had in the hospital for close to 6 months. I wouldn't be again approved and moved on. I mean, that was our long-term plan, and I think that they've hired and are doing better. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a problem that meant we were running low on places to put people in the hospital, mm-hmm. and we were having trouble getting people to the care center, and that resulted in a low census, and this was not a short-term situation. Right. It went on quite a while, and it was probably something that with better planning would have been more avoidable, I think. But
better planning on his part.
It may be a little late to complain.
Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other questions for Mary?
Well, yeah, along those lines, in your notes you say that we've had 11 transfers. Is that like transfers in or transfers out?
No, transfers out, which is a pretty low number, which makes me happy also, because it means, again, we're keeping higher acuity patients here. So what, we had 45 admits, I think. Which is great, which means everybody's just getting more comfortable with making higher acuity and the doctors are more comfortable with everything. So.
Well, some of it could be attributable to our facility.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was so happy we had OB open and all the rooms open and had room for everybody. You know, you hate to say we're on diverse, but we can double up. They're way more comfortable than double up, but yeah, it gets crowded.
Well, thank you, Mary. Next, our Director of Clinic Operations, Heidi.
Hi. I actually also don't have too much to add to my report. Our February numbers were down a bit, which was not unexpected. But walk-in was busy, and honestly, March, I'm very curious to see March walk-in numbers because that has been a beautiful beast for pretty much the entire month. So it's been good.
I think our volume, the story of March is our volume across the board has from the armor to the floor to the clinic has been, we have been, is people have been pulled in a lot of directions. And,
and your staffing is in a good place?
Staffing nursing-wise is great. Mm-hmm. And we're getting the registration staff trained up too, so that's more stable than it's been in the 12 months that I've been here in that role. So things are looking good right now.
Good to hear. Any questions for Heidi?
It's like month over month, they always get this positive, newly established patients, you know, so that's a good one.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always nice to see those on the schedule.
Okay. As our final report, the Director of Quality and Compliance, Miranda, you probably have a long report.
Try to make it quick. The only thing I wanted to highlight on my report that probably you see is new, you'll see on there that I reported that we've done 99 DO-IT projects throughout the facility. And this is the departmentally organized improvement tactic framework that we've provided all of our staff. And so they're tiny little small performance improvement things. Some of them being very simple, clear up to larger projects. So the fact that we've had 99 at the time of my report, small improvement projects is really awesome since its inception. That means 99 projects of improvement where we've made small changes, and those make very big impacts overall. We've started doing a really cool feature where we're doing a DO-IT project of the month. So we're highlighting the ones that have the biggest impact or are meaningful towards our values, our mission, vision, those types of things. So January, we had a group on the floor who did OB education and emergency training for neonatal stuff. So they got the January DO-IT of Project Month, or January DO-IT of the Month award. And then in February, our radiology department took a couple of their rooms and did some reorganization to help with patient flow and also to help with ergonomics of our radiology techs. So very cool things, make a lot of difference overall. And then for hospice or home health things, we did have a RN resign, and so we've opened up a position there. And speaking of volume and it being increased across the board, hospice has seen the highest census for years right now, so we have a lot of hospice patients. I want to contribute that a lot to the work of our new director, Steve. He brought with him a wealth of knowledge of hospice. He's doing a lot of education across the board of trying to get patients on service sooner, you know, instead of waiting to the last minute and not reaping the most benefit out of hospice. He's doing education with nursing staff and providers, like, let's get them in sooner under our wing so we can take care of that full spectrum hospice care as it's intended. So I do want to give some kudos to him for the efforts that he's putting in there. So
I had a question about an incident. There were falls and such, injuries, minor, major, and then there was one in the other category, and I wondered if that's something scary and bad, or is that just strange enough to not have a category?
It's usually strange enough to not have a category. Like the care center, we report an incident if we have lost hearing aids, and that typically will make the other category. So it's not really highlightable as far as the scariness of it. So it gets categorized in other.
So not to worry too much about that category.
No. Those are the interesting stories, usually.
Dentures and the like. Anyway, there was an item that Shelley alluded to in our financial about there may be some financial repercussions of an ER charge audit that's coming up, and is that a, does that fall into a compliance category where we were doing things that was not according to the rules, or are you aware of it?
I'm aware of a couple of things, so I'm not really sure. I'm probably speaking about specifics, might not want to go there, but I am aware Shelley keeps me up to speed with all of our compliance things, and so from my standpoint, from compliance, there's no red flags where we've done anything of
that could be considered fraudulent at all.
Yes, that is a good way to put it. Thank you.
So they may just disagree with how we've allocated charges?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any other questions for our director of Q&C?
The compliance committee, it's fairly new, is it not?
It is.
I mean, how's it been going from process and procedure?
Yeah, I would say from my standpoint, it's wonderful to have peeled that off of quality. We were putting quality and compliance into a one-hour meeting, and since we've peeled it off, we've really been given the opportunity to really dive deep into some of the compliance things that we're working towards. The group of people that are in that compliance room, we have our revenue cycle folks and Shelley, we have the appropriate people on the committee and the appropriate people on our quality committee. Whereas before it was kind of everybody doing the same thing. So we are putting a lot more effort into it, and I think it's going really well. We're doing, if you guys remember the compliance assessment that we had last year from Philip with Ovation, we are tackling quite a few of the to-do lists. We're over halfway through the compliance cleanup, formulating policies, making sure things are in the appropriate place. So it's going really well.
Very good. Any questions for Miranda? That really wasn't too long.
Mm-hmm. Tried.
All right, well, our CEO report is next, Luke.
All right, so today was the kickoff of our first ever new employee orientation program that we've been rolling out. Dale spent a lot of time, this is kind of something that even before he left and came back, we had kind of dreamed up. It's hard to hit all of the things we need to in a one-day training on somebody's first day. And there's just a lot of additional things we want to get to. And so they had a full agenda. That's partially why we're meeting here tonight, is because with it being scheduled, the board meeting, they were planning on going up till 5 o'clock. And with foundation committee, or the, not foundation, but finance committee, we wanted to make sure that we could, you know, keep everyone in one place, and especially with the audit presenting, it was nice to not switch rooms in the middle of it. So, but really excited. It's crazy. I think it's almost been 30 people that we've hired since January, so it was a pretty full room when I went and talked to them this morning. But really good to just be able to get, I got to talk mission, vision, values, and kind of the culture that we're trying to establish here as an organization. But there was a whole slew of topics, even hitting on you know, a brief version of the custom learning, the 7 licenses to please, I think we've talked about here, how we greet people in the hallway, and had a lot of people come through and present. Miranda presented on some compliance components. Dale talked about some HR stuff. And so even introducing people to managers, you know, it's amazing how many people that are CNAs just in the care center might not know who the manager of radiology is or lab. And so the ability to just kind of give people a bigger overview of who we are as an organization. The hope is that they feel more attached, connected to who we are, more informed, and just helps them feel more included in what we're doing here. I printed out, and you're going to love this, I got board bylaws today. And so Dr. Schuler is currently, well, actually reviewed the medical staff bylaws, and I can send electronic copies if people would prefer as well. But the plan, unless you guys, I'm not afraid to send it out by any sense of imagination, but we are going through the medical staff bylaw review right now as well. Once they get through the review, is going to share that with you guys, but it doesn't make sense to have changes bouncing back and forth unless you guys at least want to see the draft or where we're at with that. So happy to send it out, but it's 43 pages, I think, Dr. Schumer, something like that.
Every bit of that.
And not exciting read. But these things from the compliance audit, I think these are things that they truly are important and crucial. The medical staff bylaws ensure that we have processes in place to vet the providers coming in, that we're pushing quality as an organization. Part of the review that we had done by our healthcare attorney was really the suggestion that we kind of start from scratch. And so the board bylaws, as well as medical staff bylaws, are our templates based on what we do as an organization. So there's a couple things that they needed to add, which is why it's been a delay to get that out to you, based on our structure with the nursing home, home health, hospice, and some of those kind of things. So I got them printed. I have not even, I've not read more than 5 words on it. So, so we will kind of walk through this together. My hope is we can get through this in about 3 months, that we're not kind of dragging our feet with this. And so I don't know if you guys have a preference in kind of schedule, calendar. Do we want to, you know, just plan a working session next month to kind of work through? I can bring changes back to the attorney and maybe try to finalize it the following month, or looking for some feedback, I guess, from you guys and your preference for moving forward. So.
I can make a comment about that. Having been familiar with our 2018 bylaws and our 2022 bylaws, this is a document written by lawyers for lawyers, and they've managed to take a 15 or 20 page document and expand it to 43. And in terms of operating functions, I don't really see any difference. I don't think there's any major change in how we go about following the rules. There are some guidelines regarding meetings that I think need to be adjusted to what we're actually do and need to do. Other than that, it's just paperwork.
So do you want us then to, this is a draft, and to
yeah, this is
take it, and then next month we have comments, or
yeah that was kind of my thought. If we we'll just plan kind of a comment period, I can take those to the attorney. I could even see if he wants to call in for that period of the board meeting, so we can just have him here to bounce those things off of him, and then get it wrapped up. So
work for me.
Okay. All right, we will get it on the agenda for next month then. So we're gonna do, and I think it was probably about 18 months ago, Mary, we did the dementia training, something like that. And so with all the new staff we have, both in the care center and throughout the hospital, bring dementia training back. It's a great thing. It's going to be the 22nd, 29th. I think it's great for our caregivers, but we also open up to the community as well, people that maybe have family members with dementia, spouses, children, the ability to kind of give them some tools and understanding of how to best care for their loved ones and communicate with them. And so I think Jody's going to work on getting some of those things that's ran through Jody, but really excited for that process. And then Shelley talked about a little bit, or Kurt hinted at it, we're working on USDA grant, getting that submitted. It's about $200,000, and so we're hoping to get that wrapped up here in the next couple weeks so we can get those funds coming. All of that was spent through construction, so it's more of a just a legwork from our part, and so I've been in contact with USDA over the last week and a half to get that moving. And then Miranda and I talked about this today, so it did not make the agenda, but for the board subcommittee for quality and compliance, we still have not selected members, and so would entertain some conversation, I guess, on what we want to do moving forward to kind of fill that position. Just for reference, Matt, we probably talked about this before you joined. We're looking at even just a quarterly meeting. The finance committee is meeting monthly, but this committee, I don't think we need that, feel that need, unless the board feels otherwise, but kind of our intention is for that to be a quarterly meeting moving forward. So.
Is that meeting, what time of the day or when is that meeting usually?
I think that's something we can be flexible with, especially I think it works better for the finance committee to meet right before because it's a monthly meeting, but with this being quarterly, I think it's something we can be pretty flexible to make it work for the board or something.
Are you looking for volunteers?
We are.
I was like, with a medical background would be very helpful for quality. So.
I'd be happy to.
You can sign me up too.
I made eye contact.
I think you were looking for two, and if it keeps me off the finance committee, it's a good thing.
You got it.
So we probably do need a motion just so that's in the minutes to appoint you to the quality and compliance committee.
I move that Dr. Schuler and myself get appointed to the quality subcommittee.
Thank you guys for volunteering, and we'll work with your schedules to come up with the time that works for both of you. And if we can get that relatively solidified, I think it makes it easy for everybody to just kind of have that on the agenda.
But typically, like Fridays are usually okay, and then we can figure it. It's moving forward.
Yep. And that's all I have. There's a lot of balls in the air, but not a lot to share at the moment. So.
Do we need to vote on that?
The committee appointment?
Oh, yeah, we probably do. Sorry, I skipped the voting process.
Yeah. It still made the minutes, but.
I was going to say, I'm like, I typed it all.
This will be more in compliance, I think. So those in favor of the appointments as moved to the Quality and Compliance Committee, please say aye. And that motion passes. Well, thank you for your input. Are there questions for our CEO, Lou?
What did you get? Well, I don't know if this is for Shelley here later. What are you guys, maybe this is for you later. How do you guys think about that?
I was actually pleased with the results, even though it was a messy process. I was pleased with the results. I thought it was very fair, and we did get an unqualified or a clean opinion on the financial statements, so they were fairly presented. So no material misstatements on them.
So they look at it, make sure that the stuff that we gave them is correct.
That's correct. And as I told you guys earlier, we did have about $2 million in adjustments. That part of that was just luck of timing. But I started at the end of July, and we were already late. We were late on our fiscal 23, and fiscal 24 was already passed. So we had to get through fiscal 23 first. So we did a lot of cleanup together. But overall, I mean, I felt completely audited by the time it was done. So we were considered high risk, which meant they audited, in some cases, 100% of an account just to make sure that everything that was supposed to be in there was in there.
How come we're high risk?
Because we were so far behind and there were so many journal entries from prior years there were staff that weren't qualified to write, to understand generally accepted accounting principles that were in positions of financial trust. And so we just have to make it past that, and I look forward to that over the next 2 years. We should be able to move past that, where we had very few audit adjustments as part of the audit. In a perfect world, you give them a trial balance, which is your balance sheet and your income statement, and they can look at it, they can test it, and everything tests correctly. And in that case, then you become a low-risk audit. But it does take 2 years of clean audits to do that with very few journal entries at the end. So I think we're in a good place. It was a great learning experience coming on to learn the hospital and what, you know, all the ins and outs of things that affect the financial statements. So I feel like I've had a pretty good education process in that, too. With regard to the financial statements, we were working on them till about 4 o'clock today, and so you didn't get the draft financials in advance, which I really like to do, but I will send those out along with the ratios after the meeting, or probably tomorrow. And one of the things you're going to see in there, and it's a brand new thing, I've never seen this in an audit recommendation before, but I believe it's probably driven by the environment, the regulatory environment nowadays, is that they are recommending that we do a fraud audit. Auditors do not test for fraud as part of the financial statement audit, but there is a greater reliance on compliance in hospitals now, and a greater risk of fraud. So I believe that's the environment that really triggered that recommendation. It has very little to do with the environment that we see every day here at the hospital, but it's more of a statement of where the risk is nationwide. Is that fair?
Okay.
Yeah. And then
I just want to give you some praise, because the amount, and I've done it, I know I've done it in the past, but the amount of work that Shelley has walked through in her time here, this is her third audit since
year end.
Were we not doing audits before? Or?
We do, with Tim being here and with the interim basis, there was it just was not progressing as fast as it should have been. And I think he had a finance degree, but I think some of that accounting had fallen off. He's been a CFO for a long time, but I don't think we were getting maybe the best version of Tim. I've worked with him previously, but there was some balls kind of left hanging out there, and you know, it seemed like we were making progress, but it just we hit some dead ends and some roadblocks. And so for Shelley to come in, and she's done an amazing job of getting us cleaned up. I think now the monthly financial statements that you guys are seeing, I have like no comments on, which is the first time since I've been here where we've had that level of trust in the accounting processes that are taking place. And I think we're moving in a great direction from that standpoint. So from a board and your fiduciary responsibility, I think we're definitely moving in a much better position where we can really make some more appropriate decisions moving forward. So.
And to piggyback off that, I went back to July. In your narrative, you have a table of the ratios. I also added an operating expense per day. I do want to highlight that AR days, they said there were 51 in the presentation. That was on net receivables. These AR days are on gross. And the reason I think that's important is that when you reduce your accounts receivable by an estimate of what you might collect, then I think you're artificially deflating it, because an estimate is just that. So I think it gives us a really good picture to look at it on the gross. and then try to get down into the 50s on that. And we have some issues, and we'll talk about, or we've talked about those in the past with trying to clean up some of the older accounts receivable. That is ongoing. So, but our cash on hand is up to 42 days. So that's improving. It's not where we want to see it. As we discussed in finance, we'd like that to be somewhere between 90 and 180 days.
Shelly, AR days, their standard is to report on gross. I asked last year for them to change it to net because of all of our AR and collections skewed it. We were like way too high, and so ratio-wise, but we might be able to just ask them to change it back. So what we're seeing monthly
ties out.
So
yeah. So those are the changes that were on your percentages. Would you bring up the PowerPoint, please? So here's your condensed balance sheet, February to January, and you can see that our assets are up quite a bit. We did receive in February payment from Meridian for our cost report settlement. We also received $504,000. That was a payment to catch us up from July to December on our increased daily rates and our increased interim rates. Property and equipment continues to increase as well as construction progresses. Accounts receivable has stayed about normal. Going down to liabilities, a lot of times accrued liabilities is a function of time, because depending upon where payroll falls, because we have payroll every 2 weeks instead of half a month, so that can make it fluctuate quite a bit, as well as those health insurance claims can have an effect on that. Current portion of long-term debt is staying pretty stable, and our debt is increasing because we have those that lease that we entered into for the Omnicell and the fluoroscope. So overall, that's all starting to smooth out. You shouldn't see a whole lot of fluctuation in that except for payments on debt. So our equity did also increase. And I'd say the driver on that is probably the $504,000 that we bought from Meridian. Next slide, please. Aging by financial class. This is pretty important. It kind of ties into what Kurt was talking about. Our current is still, that's 0 to 30 days from date of service. We're at 55% on that. That's really pretty healthy. Medicare as a percent of all of our accounts receivable was at 34% this month. That's pretty typical as well. What is not typical is our 120-day bucket at 11%. And if you look down the line, it's Blue Cross, commercial, Medicaid, Medicare. Those are quick payers. So I have met with the team to start focusing on that bucket to see what we need to do to get that cleaned up. A big driver in the private pay are 3 to 4 nursing home accounts that are we're having some troubles with, and those are being actively worked, but it's going to be an ongoing process for that. But I'd like to see the 120-day bucket no more than 5%, and that would be healthy. Questions on this? Okay, next slide, please. Statement of Revenue and Expenditures, which is the income statement, I have highlighted there in other operating revenue, the budget. There was budgeted $1.7 million that was the employee retention credit that we've been waiting on for some time. A apparently when the budget was done, they expected to get it that month. So other than that, let's see, that the deductions is pretty high, and that's a lot of fluctuations for rolling the $2 million in entries. A lot of it affected the cost report, and so that had to be normalized. You're going to see a little bit more fluctuation in that next month with the inclusion of the $760,000 additional receivable for fiscal 24, the amended cost report. So our margin from EBITDA looks pretty sad this month, but year to date it's still pretty healthy. And our revenue is, our net revenue is on track. It's just 2.2% off. So as February was a very low month, it really was. We had, as I explained in the narrative, we had had people out for bereavement. We had some sicknesses that happened and some low census. As far as the nursing home went, we were down to 27 at the end of the month. So that all affected that. Next slide, please. Our payer mix has stayed pretty consistent with Medicare at 42%. Medicare Advantage is still hanging in at 11%, and that was at about 9% last year, so it has come up. Blue Cross is also our biggest commercial payer. Private pay is hanging in there at 10%. Next slide. Our revenue trending, you can see that February was not a really good month for revenue. Not only was it just a short month, but all those other things I discussed that made it kind of tank below our budget, which we saw in the income statement. Next slide. Okay, so we have some information items. I included in your board packet a detailed listing. We have a checking account that is a donations account, so all donations that are made to the hospital, that maybe the donation is made for Amy Holt, or it's made for home health and hospice, or the hospital itself. All of those have been just building for the last few years. And so we took a look at that and said, we've spent this money really on things that meet our donors' intent. So what we did is said, what bucket, whether it's the hospital or it's Amy Holt or it's for PT, and the other one was home health and hospice, where have we really spent this money? Where we could say to a donor, we used your money for this purpose. And for example, in home health and hospice, we bought the house on DeSmit, and that was $275,000. But we had, I think it was over $200,000 in home health and hospice donations. Now we can say, hey, we have spent this for the spirit of your donation. So we're going to take that and move that money out of that restricted account. So the total of that was a little over $563,000. And so we wanted to let you know that we want to make that transfer over into the general fund to replenish those funds for monies that have already been spent. The second thing, I'm going to pass this over to Luke to talk about.
These are, my two are both on the agenda. So
okay, are they? Okay. So I'll skip down to point four. We have $4,000 a month currently budgeted for a home health and hospice specific software. So the purpose of this is to alert you that we are going to have a new vendor. They simply cannot hold on anymore with paper charts, especially with one of our people leaving in home health. It's causing a lot of manual processes. This Alora is specifically targeted to home health and hospice and can do the billing side as well. It is going to be a 2840 setup, and it's going to come in at about $2,000 a month, which is budget friendly. We like that. It will help Steve a lot in his processes over there, and I'm sure we can put a billing person on that as well, since those bills currently come through our EMR. that's all I have. Any questions?
I have a couple. As an accountant at the junior high level, I sense that a journal entry is a bad thing, but can you provide a little more background on what that means?
Okay. So when we close every month, we want to make sure that we've thought of everything and that it is reflected in the financials that we present to the board every month. So when we find something after we close the month, that creates a journal entry that then affects the next month. So, for example, the $200,000 USDA grant. I told you we were working on the financials until about 4 o'clock this afternoon. That we kind of pulled in yesterday. It was a 5-year grant, but we've spent the money. We spent the money in 2024. So it was appropriate to include that in 2024. But it was a material change. So we had to do a journal entry to pull that back into 2024 as a receivable. So what we want to prevent is big swings after a month is closed because we forgot to think about something. Does that help?
I'll work on that. But okay. Thank you.
Technically, to simplify it, every like in the ER, you see someone charges drop, that creates a journal entry inside the system too. So everything that moves from an accounting standpoint is a journal entry. There's manual journal entries that we do to catch things that don't look in the system appropriately, or things that we do through spreadsheets or various things from to hold GAAP accounting standards. But everything that happens is technically a journal entry in the accounting system, and so it doesn't mean necessarily it's a bad thing.
Right.
It just means work's taking place. So.
Yeah.
And more work from an accounting standpoint.
Yeah.
Yes, but we want to make sure that we have thought of everything when we get to the audit. And their job is not to help us fix errors. Their job is to take what we have given them and say, is it materially correct?
And I'm getting a feeling that in order to receive the employee retention credit money, we had to hire a company that did something,
yes,
filing, and they charged us about $200,000 to do this. Is that in the ballpark?
That was the first part of that, and they are waiting for us to be paid, because when we get paid, we'll owe them $189,000. It was 15% of what we filed a claim for with the IRS. But because we don't know if they're going to pay it or not, we have not yet recorded that receivable, and we expensed the initial payment.
So I'm assuming we didn't really have an option. That just sounds like a really high fee to do what? Tell you that we're still waiting for the check to arrive?
Well, they couldn't control the moratorium that happened shortly after we filed the returns. So that's been the biggest part of the delay. And then there were over 40,000 ERC credit refunds filed, and the IRS is backlogged. It is the taxpayer advocate's number one issue. So they are trying to process them and get them out. The latest that we've heard is that they're trying to process the six-figure refunds first. We have two, and both of them are seven-figure. So we're expecting $2.6 million from the employee retention credit, and we'll have to pay $189,000 out to Synergy on that for helping us to prepare those returns.
Part of what we paid for as well was assistance, not just in submitting the documentation, but assessing the appropriateness of whether or not we qualified for the quarter or not. So they helped dig. We sent them a ton of documentation, and they really helped. You know, there were three quarters technically available for us to apply to. We only qualified for two. And they really helped us make sure that we got there. We worked with a company that has been around for, I could have told you a year ago, 30, 40 years, something like that, in helping with this line of work. A lot of people popped up with this specific tax credit, and we're just getting them through and not helping assess the appropriateness of the application. And so a lot of people got paid, and that's part of why they put a halt on paying out the ERC, is because there was a lot of fraud associated with it. And so the firm we work with has a attorney group that actually, you know, if we get audited for appropriateness, their attorneys take that fight on for us to work with the IRS to go through that audit. And so there definitely was a pretty high fee, but I think we worked with someone who's pretty reputable and making sure we're doing it appropriately. So the last thing we want to do is have it come back that we are fraudulently applying for tax credits.
All right, any other questions?
I was going to ask you about the fraud, and you brought it up, you know, briefly in our earlier finance committee meeting, and then you brought it up here again, kind of forgot about it. So who's recommending that we get a fraud audit?
It will be in the recommendations that are part of the audit financial report that I'll send you. So I didn't want you to be surprised when you saw it there, but as I said, I think it's just a trend nationwide that they're starting to recommend this rather than anything particular to Johnson County.
So once we get the final audit, we'll have a chance to look at all those recommendations and discuss them and so forth.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be nicer to call it an appropriate audit or something along those lines.
Yeah. But I will send you the drafts tonight so you can look at them. I don't expect any changes to the final. You've approved it.
Yeah, we've approved it.
And if there are any changes, of course, we would alert you to those before the final is issued.
Okay, well, it's been a financially enlightening evening. Thank you for that. I have no idea what a network switch approval is, but somebody probably knows what we're going to talk about next.
I can help with that. So a couple of years ago, we applied for a federal program called USAC. Historically, we have gotten funding for our internet service, but the Wyoming Hospital Association partnered with the Nebraska Hospital Association, because inside of USAC, there's actually 9 categories where we can receive funding. Through that process with Digitex, we were able to apply and get, I think it was about $100,000 of grant funds back through that. The way our contract worked with our new vendor, I think the dollar amount actually is gonna be a little bit higher, but one of the necessities that's come out of the conversation I had with our USEC vendor that helps with that grant funding is network security. They're only going to pay for network security if they're securing USEC purchased devices. And so right now, none of our network switches were purchased with USEC funding. And so what we need to do in order to get those funds allowable by the USEC grant is actually purchase some equipment that supports our network. And so the grant window opens in April, and so this is something we wanted to bring to the board. It's a total of $30,000 for 2 switches and service on those switches. But at the end of the day, we won't purchase those funds until next fiscal year. So that window for purchase doesn't even open until July 1st. So it matches up really well with our fiscal year. They'll go on our budget, but in order for us to submit them on the grant, we wanted to make sure that you guys were okay with moving forward with these, since we won't have the budget approval in time for that grant window. So in the long run, we get... Do you remember the percentage of
we get 65% back. And so I think network security is about $250,000. We get 65% back on this $30,000. And for that to be eligible for the 65%, in my mind, it's pretty much a no-brainer. We get way more back by investing in this equipment than we do. And a lot of what this stuff is replacing is outdated equipment anyway. So I don't think we have a whole lot of waste in order to move forward.
So that'll be in the capital budget for the next fiscal year?
Yeah.
And we'll still call it a network switch?
Yeah.
Okay. Should be able to remember that.
Okay. So is everyone in favor of moving forward? I don't know if we necessarily need, you guys will approve it, but I at least need a green light that we can submit for the funding for you guys. So. Okay. See a lot of heads shaking.
Nodding all around.
Well, it sounds like we should. I mean, yeah. If we're going to get 65% of it paid for and it's a security thing and in the cyber world, it's like, yeah, we should do it. Are we guaranteed? Like, so you're going to apply for the grant. Are we guaranteed to do it?
I think we so. Are? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're good ones to yeah. be a part of. So.
Well, on a related topic, we've switched our IT vendor, and we've had some time to try it out. And we've also had some challenges, especially with Allscripts. What's your impression of how that's gone, and are we getting good service, and are we happy with the change?
Yeah, so the transition has not been as smooth as possible, or as what we were hoping, and there's definitely, the clinics felt the weight of that far more than I think anyone else in the facility has. I still think we made the right choice. What I would describe it as, I think we had reached our ceiling previously, and we probably had a drop off from what we were expecting previously. But I think long term, the where they can take us as an organization for integrating IT services throughout our campus is so much farther ahead of where Digitex could take us. They're already talking about, you know, AI solutions from a healthcare standpoint that they're monitoring. We weren't getting any of that. All of that stuff was getting vetted by us internally, and we don't have the knowledge base in-house to really monitor that. So I think, though there's been areas where there's been drop-off and it hasn't been as good, I think we're getting through those hiccups, and I think in the future we're going to see a much better IT product moving forward. So
we're also discovering a lot of things that were previously behind the veil that weren't necessarily built correctly, for lack of better terminology, and making a lot of those fixes on the back end to have a better front end experience. But it takes a lot of time, and sometimes we break things when we try to fix them. So, but I think Allscripts is getting better, which is a really
I'm afraid to say anything.
Does Allscripts have folks on site? Do they have people here?
So Allscripts is the software we use for our clinic documentation.
Okay,
so our IT vendor is Scale Data Health. Will they just change the name?
Scale Data.
And so we have two employees on site. Russ moved over and is working with them, and then they brought in one, Caleb Burridge, and they are actively recruiting for a third. So we will have about 1.2 FTEs more in-house than what we've had historically. But I think on the back end, Anna's kind of their main point person, but there's a lot better communication on the back end for the support that I think we're receiving. And so they're doing a lot of help from an EMR evaluation standpoint, and we've been on a bunch of calls over the last 2 months.
a lot of that they started even before we went live with them, so in helping with some of those solutions. But.
And you think they're meeting muster?
Yes. I think the amount of work that landed in them landed in their laps was a little bit more than was anticipated. So we're getting there. I feel very bad for Heidi.
Well, I think we're now ready to talk about a construction change order for about $91,000. I think I saw a figure flash by.
Yes. So a lot of this we've talked about over the last several months. I got individual items that I brought to the board in the past. This is a one sign change order, and part of the reason I'm bringing it as a whole is the last item that was added was a egress ramp, which is $33,000. So that had not come to the board yet. The total of $91,000, I'll just kind of run down the, what we're looking at. So an infusion room, if you guys remember, we talked about this. We had a storage room that wasn't really going to be used. But all of our outpatient infusions we were looking at doing in one of our inpatient rooms. With the growth in census that we've experienced since we moved into the inpatient space, and definitely over the last couple of weeks, we've needed all the rooms we can muster. And so that cost in total is about $39,000. But I think that gives us a much better patient experience moving forward in a designated spot. It's right by the inpatient nurse station. And we can pull a lot of that out of the emergency room where it's being done right now. Some of these things were as state walked through the facility doing inspections, things that were caught that maybe through a demo process were existing conditions that weren't known. And so there was an infusion damper issue that had to be changed, so part of our HVAC system. Our clinic, we missed this when we upgraded nurse call system. We had one of our patient bathrooms in the clinic had still had the old nurse call system in it, so we had to make an update to get that in line. It essentially was going to nowhere. The egress ramp, like I said, was $33,000. And then the rest of it was additional stuff that was caught by the state. And so the total of all that comes to the $91,000 in total. So, like I said, with most of this being stuff we brought to the board, most of this work has been completed to date, except for the ramp at this point in time. So the dampers, I believe, were done, or will be done this weekend, which is something that was identified by the state. But something that needs to be done for us to move forward with construction.
Where is the ramp?
So it'll go, so the shift will, when we expanded Central Sterile, for them to have room to get their new sterilizer, that will, the exit going into OB is disappearing, so we won't have an exit out of the building that way at all anymore. So the new exit will come down that hallway back towards the cafeteria, and then about halfway down that hallway there was a really eroded ramp and stairs, if you remember that.
The old loading dock.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that we'll have a new ramp that needs to be compliant. So, and the main, and it's good that our grading slopes away from the building, but we have to extend that ramp about 40 feet, and so it's a lot of concrete to meet ADA compliance. So it's far enough, we have to have a landing in the middle of it before we can continue all the way. So
if we were evacuating a patient from the OR in the event of an emergency, that would be the new egress?
No, they have, I think there's OR egress, there's still one that's available. That kind of comes in right where you can get into the OR, but OB would be, that would be the egress way out for OB. So. And if all things are appropriate, people could keep
continue to come down, but that's one of those health code things that you can only have an ingress where you travel so far before you can get out of the building. So we're, and actually I think the issue is our hallway is like 6 inches too small, and so it was more expensive to widen the hallway than it was to pour a lot of concrete.
Well, overall, I would say the number of change orders has been relatively small. We've added some things that we realized later would be a benefit, but as far as too many problems or add-ons, I think that's been relatively within the contingency budget for the project. Does that sound accurate?
Yeah, I think, and I also think doing it when we have people on site is more affordable than if we bring them back to do something 6 months after they're done. So I think there is some advantages to that. The need for us to upgrade our sterilizers with growing the operating room and some of those kind of things. We're kind of seizing the opportunity. The other thing that is coming with that transition is we're locking down one aspect to the OR, and then this next budget year, we talked about it a couple of months ago at a board meeting, on needing to secure a building in more ways. Our OR needs to be locked down more than it is right now, and so there'll be some badge access doors that we'll look at putting in to provide better security to the OR and make sure that from a sterilization standpoint that we can maintain the highest level of cleaning inspectors.
Are there more state inspections that could result in unanticipated change orders?
They have to come sign off on what we're doing in the clinic in the hallway, so there's potential for that, but they've done walkthroughs up to this point in time, so I think for the most part everything should have been caught. So I'm not going to say it's not a possibility because we had some surprises. I want to say it was with phase one from the state kind of at the end, but some of that had to do with like running electrical or doing the therapy addition. So, but I don't anticipate there being much coming from the state at this point.
Well, I guess unless we have more discussion, we would need a motion to approve the cost order for those items.
I'd make a motion to approve the construction change order.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Those in favor of the change order for $91,000, please state so by saying aye.
Aye.
There is another category in our general meeting for credentialing. And I believe there was one teleneurologist and three teleradiologists, or four.
Four.
And these are people we'll never meet, and hopefully they do a good job. And the medical staff has reviewed those applications and have not found any problems.
No, they were all approved.
So I would entertain a motion to approve those credentials if so desired.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
Has been moved and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes in real time, that's nice. Well, that completes our general session. We do have scheduled an executive session, but we can take a short break to get ready for the final round.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.